Lots of things going on in the financial world. We're back on Eye on the Market with David England. David is an associate professor and finance and founder of the website thetraderseye.com. David, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for the opportunity.
A lot of people are talking about the Greek debt crisis. It continues to weigh on investors' minds, and people are really watching what effects it might have both in Europe and all over the world. Investors have the opportunity for what's being called a debt swap. They're able to go in. Greece is going to say, we'll pay you X amount on the dollar for the debt that that we owe you. What long-term effects are you looking for here? What's going to happen a week, a month, or perhaps a year down the road?
There's some good things to learn from this. Let's throw two or three things on the table. First of all, what's going on now, it's going to be the negotiation. Are we going to, the people that have the bonds, are they going to get 20 cents on the dollar or 30 cents on the dollar? That's not a good thing, but 20 cents or 30 cents on the dollar is better than zero on the dollar. A couple things to learn from this. The contagion is what's going on in Europe. Is that going to be, I mean, is the risk off with the United States market? The question of that is still too early to say, but there's less risk in the short term. And if you take a look at things, some of the things are really starting to settle out in Europe. When we take a look at the bond rates, they're back down into somewhat of a world of real. But we have to ask ourselves, why? If you take a look at the balance sheet of the European Central Bank, it looks like a rocket ship taking off. So when you put that much money into a system, that's going to solve problems short term. But as we've discussed this for many, many months, we have more than economic challenges. We have decades of social challenges and these kinds of things. So there's a lot more going on in Europe than what's being discussed. Short term, it's helping our banks because part of that, the easing is off. But something else we must learn from this. The rule of thumb is municipal bonds and these kinds of things have always been safe. A lot of people are finding out that they aren't. And whenever then the textbooks say bonds are safe, that's outdated. Look at the folks that had the GM bonds that got thrown under the bus. GMAC. Look at some of the municipalities now in the United States, down in Alabama, where Birmingham is, Stockton, California. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. I still like municipal bonds because of the tax status, but not all municipal bonds are safe. There are still some. So there are many things to learn from this.
The bottom line, like so many things, is you really need to do your homework and know what you're investing in.
Financial education. Yes. What worked 20 years ago, 10 years ago, last year, it's a different world now. But for everything negative, there are many, many opportunities. As you know, I'm a solutions person, not a rock checker. But we must also see what's going on. Those people that have held these bonds, they're going to get quite a haircut. That's not good. So the question is, what about the bondholders in Spain, Portugal, Italy, France, and then, of course, one of the biggest things is about how Germany's reacting to this.
Sure. We spend a lot of time talking about unemployment numbers across the United States here. There's been a little bit of cautious optimism as we've watched that number come down from above 400,000 down to around 350,000 last month. This week, they're saying 362,000 new claims for unemployment.
Correct.
This week. Is that bump of almost 8,000 people surprising? And what effect do you think it might have?
When you see 8,000 people compared to our population of 3.3 million, it doesn't look as bad. But if we take a look at it, all last fall, we were looking at 400,000 people every week were signing up for unemployment for the first time. That's the population of Atlanta. We put that in perspective. What we need to do is to get this number down well underneath 300,000, 200, or 250 and 200,000. Some people that are employed look at this and it doesn't bother them. Well, obviously, but we got to look at those people that are unemployed. Now, we have different numbers. This is that weekly number. Tomorrow is the big number of the number that comes out for the unemployment rate for February. And, of course, that's the U2 number and the U6 number. We've got to get that U6 number down underneath 15%. That's the unemployed and the underemployed. But we must also realize that number is like Swiss cheese because the way the numbers are calculated back during the Clinton administration, I'm just giving that as a time reference back in the 80s, they changed the way the unemployment number is figured. If you get off unemployment now, then you're no longer counted. That's why I like to look at the people that are employed. Plus, Jennifer, one thing that doesn't show up that much are the people that do more than one job. And there are many of us that do more than one job. And that needs to be taken into consideration also. But the bottom line is the unemployment number is looking better. We need to get it looking a whole lot better. But it is looking better, and that's positive.
Americans, as a rule, if you talk to analysts, are somewhat impatient. They're watching these numbers, which are getting better, but they're getting better very slowly. And as you talk to some of the economists, they're saying it's going to take time to get out of this. Maybe the crash happened quickly. The number of people losing jobs, having housing problems happened quickly, but it's going to take a long time to climb out. Mm-hmm. Are they starting to project a time that we'll start looking more like we did, say, 10 years ago?
Well, let's look at it this way. Let's look at Japan. They had a financial crash also. It was a little bit different than ours, but it's still financial. When you have crashes and then you have financial crashes, the financial ones always take longer for it to go through the system. Jennifer, they're going on their third decade of a sideways or a down market. Now, I'm not going to say we're going to have two or three decades. And by the way, with some of the strategies that I do, a sideways market's fantastic with our share building. You know, you don't have to just be held hostage to a bull market when it goes up. We still have a lot of unwinding to do due to the fact that, it was a crash, in addition to a financial situation, a financial meltdown that we came so close to having an international financial meltdown. It's going to take a while for this thing to work its way through the system, especially with our foreclosures, you know, these kinds of things. Those are going through. Can I just say one thing?
Sure.
A lot of people always like to throw rocks at the Fed. It was the Fed's programs they put through last year that have helped to pull this 10-year bond rate down so that I and many others could get a mortgage refinancing at under 4%. So when we throw rocks at the Fed, and by the way, there's many things that I don't like that they do, but you know what? I don't have the same information base that they do. But there are many things that have happened that have helped us as Americans to get our mortgage rates down, lower interest, and these kinds of things. So let's remember that before we pick up that rock and throw it.
Always lots of different pieces of the puzzle.
Oh, many puzzle pieces.
A few minutes remaining in this segment. We talked last month about the effect that Apple has had.
Oh, yes.
Both on the index that it's in and the overall stock market. Yesterday we saw the announcement of a new version of the iPad, and Apple's stock takes a big jump. Can Apple, or a company like Apple, carry the U.S. market and keep it in positive, confident territory?
In my classes and seminars, I teach how different companies can have a larger effect on the index weighting. Now, without getting into a lot of the details, Apple has more index weighting than any other company. So that whenever you have a huge momentum play like Apple, I'm a firm believer that that's a large part of why we've had this continued rally. Because as a trader, whenever we see one index go up, typically they trade in the same direction 80 to 90% of the time. So when you have Apple, a huge part of the NASDAQ, a larger part of the S&P, they are not in the Dow Industrials. By the way, if they would have been named in the Dow Industrials instead of Cisco, the Dow would be up well over 1,600 points now, in addition to what it is. They weren't named, but that was back when they've had a tremendous growth. Okay, so Apple is so important, but something else that we need to take a look at. Let's look at the previous Apples, as in the large cap companies that were the industry leaders. Where are they now? Wall Street loves to sell those. By the way, what's the stock of what's the price of Microsoft the last 10 to 12 years? Intel, GE, and a few others. Sometimes it's the kiss of death by being the large cap major stock. Apple right now is bucking the trend. The question is, can it continue to buck the trend? But that also shows you the danger of going buy and hold with the largest large cap stock. Many times they have a sideways market for many years. Take a look at Cisco. They wish it had only been sideways.
Certainly. A lot of things to keep an eye on. A lot of pressure on the folks at Apple, as well as those keeping track of that in terms of investing.
And let's hope that Apple can start to get more things built in the United States instead of in China.
Sure. David England, we sure appreciate your time here on Eye on the Market.
It's always a pleasure.
Thanks very much. back on Eye on the Market with David England. David, of course, is the Associate Professor of Finance at John A. Logan College and founder of the website thetraderseye.com. David, we left off talking about kind of the future of what we're hoping for. Big companies like Apple, smaller companies, where the market is going to be heading. And I
yes.
know that you work a lot with, shall we say, novice traders,
yes.
up to experts.
Sure.
Telling them more about, you know, tips of the trade, things that people ought to be searching for. The John A. Logan Investment Club is meeting this evening. It's a free meeting here in Carbondale.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about what the topic is for tonight.
Tonight, we're very, very privileged to have Dan Passarelli. Now, if you're going to be getting into options, I would definitely take a look at listening to people that have already been down the road, know where the potholes are, and how deep. It can save you a lot of pain and money. So we have Dan coming down tonight. It's at the Carbondale Civic Center at 6 o'clock. Meet and greet at 6 o'clock, and the presentation starts at 6:30. Now, some people are saying, I never want to trade options. Why do I want to be there? Well, here's the thing about options. It gives us the opportunity to look at the other team's playbook. We may never, ever buy a call or a put, but there's a lot of knowledge that we can gain by seeing what the big money is doing. If they're doing more calls than puts, then they're leaning more towards the long side. More puts and calls, the short side. So there's a lot of information that we can glean. And by the way, many people are looking at an income after retirement, $300-$500 a month, whatever it is, by doing covered calls or trading for income. That's one of the main things that Dan's going to speak about tonight.
We're lucky enough to have Dan Passarelli in the studio. Thanks for coming. I sure appreciate it. You say options to some people who are not familiar with trading. Maybe they let their 401k go with a financial planner. Maybe they're not in the market at all. On a basic level, what are options and how can people take advantage of those?
Options are a way to control your risk. That's the best way that I can put it. A trader can go out and buy a stock, and everybody's pretty familiar with that. I mean, you buy a stock at $50 a share, goes higher, you make money, goes lower, you lose money. But the problem is every once in a while, the market can act kind of erratic. Like a couple years ago, we had the flash crash. You know, those things don't happen every day or every week, but they absolutely happen time to time. And when those things happen, if you're there owning stocks, you can be left holding the bag and you can have a profound loss that can take years to recover from. But if instead you make a simple option trade like buying a call, you have limited loss. You have most of the cash that you would have invested in a stock sitting in a very safe, you know, account earning interest. And you have very, very limited risk. So they're a really, really fantastic risk control device for traders and investors alike.
A lot of people look at how Wall Street works and they say, I'm not an insider. I don't understand what's going on. And it's the fault of people who use things like options that the stock market is the way it is. Is it a win-win situation for everyone or are there flaws to that system?
Yeah, you know, throughout probably all of history, people demonize things they don't understand. You know, I have a great friend in the options business who describes options as they're kind of like fire. You can use it to heat your house or to burn it down. and it's true. There are people who don't get the education they need and frankly don't know what they're doing and they get in too deep and they can lose a lot of money. And if you don't know what you're doing, you sure can lose a whole bunch of money with options. But for the rest of us, those who put in the time to learn them, they can be an excellent tool. And on the one hand, they can enable you to take on more risk and trade leverage. But on the other hand, they can enable you to take on so much less risk and be so much more conservative.
Talk about some of the steps that you go through when you're looking at an option and whether or not you're going to take the plunge with something. What are you looking for and how do you make your decision?
Sure. I mean, I start out looking at maybe a stock chart, maybe getting some sort of spark of an idea from, you know, somewhere else, fundamental analysis or something. And then what I do is I craft a position around what I see in the market. Because, I mean, I described options as the ability to take on a more leveraged position or the ability to be more conservative. But there's kind of a whole universe of what you can do with options. You can trade neutral markets. It's not really related to being more risky or less risky. It's just something altogether different than what you can do with the stock. You can trade volatility. You can trade interest. So what I do is I look at what's going on in a particular stock and then look at things like volatility, look at the stock chart, look at the option chain that's the available options to trade, and craft a position that best exploits what I see.
You use the term exploit, and that can be kind of a charged word for some people. Is this the opposite of trading? Some people have said to me, well, I think options are the opposite of what I know about trading. And so it just doesn't make sense to me why you would do things that way. Is that how you would describe it?
No, not at all. It is the epitome of trading. If you're a trader, your goal is to, well, to take money out of the market. And, well, let me kind of postulate that. You have a couple of goals, really. One is to take money out of the market, but the other is to protect the money that you have in your account. So options enable you to kind of do both at the same time. You know, to when I say craft a position, I mean I want my risk to be limited to this, but I want to make the most I can possible if the market goes my way. And I want to put the passing of time on my side, and perhaps I want to put volatility on my side also. So I can take all the influences that go into a trade that even a typical non-option trading stock trader look at, and I want to take all those influences and put them all in my favor so I can have the best odds, the best chances of success, and the best what I call edge on my trade every single time.
For someone who's just starting out, maybe they've made a few trades, maybe they handle their own portfolio. How do they get into actions such as this and still minimize the risk?
Well, I mean, the simple answer is education. I mean, it's very, very typical for people who first get out into investing or maybe even trading. I make an important distinction there. To hire a broker or someone to manage their money for them. But the fact is, often you can do the same thing yourself. But you can't unless you have the education. And there can be a lot to just being a stock trader, but then options, the complexity of them gets multiplied many fold. So you really have to kind of take your time and put in your time to learn your craft.
Just about a minute or so remaining. How have you weathered the recent financial near meltdown, at least the crash, and what are you looking for in the future?
Yeah, you know, it seems like every time I talk about the market, I tend to say, you know, this is a really interesting time in the market right now. and that's the thing I love about this business. It always keeps you on your toes, and it's always different every time. It's just a puzzle that keeps on changing that you have to keep on figuring out. And, you know, once again, the thing with options is I'm just going to keep on keeping on and keep going at it.
Sure. Dan Passarelli is an author and an expert in options trading. You can hear more from him this evening as a part of the John A. Logan Investment Club. The meeting is at 6:30, which is just coming up here in a few minutes at the Carbondale Civic Center. If you'd like more information or want to get in touch with the Investment Club, you can email David England at davidengland@jalc.edu. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Information and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of WSIU or Southern Illinois University. The information contained in this program has been included for general information purposes only, and no person should make any investment decisions in reliance upon the content of this program.